Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivar Dhari Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivar Dhari Jai Gopi Jisodhanandana Prajajanarhanjadhaya Sanam Yasodhanandana Prajajanarhanjadhaya Sanam Jamunatirahavana Chahari Jamunatira Jamuna tira havana chari jam tira jayarhata madhava kunjavi hari jay jayarhata madhava Kunjavi Hari Jai Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivardhana Hari Jai Gopi Girivardhana Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivardhari Jaya Gopi Jisodhanandana Prajajanarhanjadhaya Yasodhanandana Prajajanarhanjadhaya Jamuna tira havana chari jamuna tira jamuna tira havana chari jamuna jai radham hanava kunjabi hari radamadavam Sri Sri Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hari Jai Go Premanandi Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahans Parivajak Acharya Astotra Sattva Sri Sriman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Kri Shri Shri Kishore Kishori Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai, Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo, Glories to the Assembled Devotees, All Glories to the Assembled Devotees, Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna, welcome to part two, but lesson number four. Actually, we did lesson one and three this morning. Number four is entitled From Seed to Buds. And this is Srila Prabhupada in his beginning days when he first developed his relationship with his spiritual master and how everything unfolded in the early days in India. And last lesson, we deepened our relationship with Prabhupada by getting a little bit deeper understanding of what a founder acharya is, what is his characteristics, what are his activities, like that. So this is the next one, and then the one at 6:30, which is in the last class today, will go from buds to flowers, and that is Prabhupada in America when he first came. So this is to help us go deeper into the life of Srila Prabhupada, which means going deeper into the life of our Krishna conscious practice. So where's this? Who knows? Huh? Radha Damodar Temple. Get more specific. Yeah, that's Prabhupada's room in Radha Damodar Temple. He had his own room in the temple. He had two rooms. He had a room and he had a kitchen. They were across from each other. That photo is 1972, which is the room is really fixed up. And when Prabhupada was there in the 1950s, it was just a dirt floor, mud walls, and nothing modern. All he had was one little table. That's quite modern. That's a later picture. Okay, so. All right, his mission. Where's this scene? Calcutta. Okay. And it's an easy one for him. So, and Prabhupada is meeting his spiritual master, and it's up on the roof of a particular building, which was the first temple that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati started at 1 Ulta Danga Junction Road, right? Okay. And there's a little Chaitanya Charitamrita class going on, given by Bhaktisiddhanta. Okay, so things start to unfold. Who would like to read this first one? We got a microphone. Okay.
And preparing to sit, before any preliminary formularities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta immediately said to them, "You are educated young men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?"
Wow.
Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 1.
Why is that so unusual? Or so unique, you might say. Why was that statement so unique? I mean, not the statement itself, but the context. Yes. Yeah, it wasn't even a spiritual master. It was just somebody he came to hear. And he paid his obeisances, like the culture of India, when you go see a saintly person, you offer your respects. And immediately, before he even got up, Bhaktisiddhanta was telling him he should go to the West and preach. Wow. Imagine if that happened to you. It's like, all of a sudden, you're thrown into immediately, your whole life is being told what to do immediately. By someone you don't even know, a first meeting. Amazing. And this is from the Lilamrita. Okay. So here's Prabhupada's response or thought at the time. Someone read.
I was from a Vaishnava family, so I could appreciate what he was preaching. Of course, he was speaking to everyone, but he found something in me. I was so much struck with wonder. I could understand. Here is the proper person who can give a real religious idea.
Yeah. Who knows the history where Prabhupada used to, when he was living with his parents in his earlier days, his father was very magnanimous and very open-hearted. And so when sadhus would come, he would allow them to stay at the house and he would give them food, place to stay, and whatever else they needed. And Prabhupada said sometimes it would be 2, 3, 4 different traveling sannyasis, holy men, staying at my house. But he said, I was never so impressed by any of them, even as a young man. None of them really impressed me. But then, after meeting Bhaktisiddhanta, he he was really impressed. And just this is only a quick interchange. So immediately he could recognize here was a very special personality. And let me see, what's the next slide here? Okay, this is going a little bit too fast. Let's just go, let's explore this a little bit longer. What else happened here after, you know, this was said? Who knows? Some history, yes.
India's freedom movement.
Ah.
And
what did he say?
He said he wants to join the movement for freedom of the country. Mm-hmm. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj told him that there are so many people who are in that movement, and that is really not so important. Spreading the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is much more meaningful and will be much more beneficial for the entire world.
And much more immediate. Prabhupada said, we are a dependent nation, so who will listen to our message? First we need Swaraj, we need liberation from the British rule. And Prabhupada was a follower of Gandhi. When it was time for his diploma, when he was supposed to be there at his initiation, he didn't show up. He rejected his diploma as a protest against the British control. So he was into the nonviolent movement of Gandhi. So when Bhaktisiddhanta said this, he responded. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, this political party, that political party, there'll always be something. But Lord Chaitanya's message or mission is the need of the time. And Prabhupada was convinced. So, but that meeting was in 1922. So what actually happened here between Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta? Maybe that's a hard question to answer. Yes. He was defeated. Yes, he admitted, because he was usually never defeated. But then, what did he say? He said, I... And? Yeah, that's the point. Not officially, but in his heart, he said, this is my spiritual master. And we understand from Shastra that that is actually the initiation. When you accept the guru in your heart, the initiation is the formal consummation of what's in the heart. If the heart is not there, the formal ceremony really has no real meaning. Yes.
When you find a willingness to serve a person, then you know that that is your spiritual master. So sometimes we may feel like we may accept someone in the heart, but does that mean that if that is actually happening, a desire to serve them will also naturally manifest?
Not only serve, but give your life. Give your life in service. And that's what Prabhupada, he said, I was willing to follow whatever instructions he said. But it was somehow or other, although, yeah, that's the understanding. Okay. Someone may ask you to serve, and you may also serve, and you may also be inspired to serve. But if you're willing to give your life in service to work underneath that person, that's the mode of disciple to guru. Yeah, that's the real mode. And that comes from the heart, and that comes from realization, and not simply by someone says, well, there's your guru. Maybe that's yours, but it may not be mine. No one can tell you who your spiritual master is. They can encourage you in a certain direction, but you have to find that within your own self. Okay, so the seed was planted. But what happened? It was a long time after that before anything really manifested. Prabhupada was still, he was married. He had his first son, was born. He was only married for 4 years. His first son was born. Now he was getting a career in Dr. Bose's laboratories. He was becoming a famous pharmacist. So much so that his medicines were being sold in many places, and he was actually developing new medicines. So his material career started to blossom right at this same time. So it wasn't till this, what is this? 32, and this is what's happening here. Prabhupada Ginnan, so it was 10 years after he met his spiritual master that actually he actually took initiation. 10 years. So don't complain if you have to wait a year or two. 10 years. Okay. We need a fast-running microphone personality. Okay.
He and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta were now face-to-face, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized him and was visibly pleased to see him. He already knew him. "Yes," he said, exchanging looks with Abhay. "He likes to hear. He does not go away. I have marked him. I will accept him as my disciple."
Yes, he likes to hear. Wow, that's the key. So, what incident is Bhaktisiddhanta referring to? Who knows that one? Yes, Melissa. Okay. Yeah, it's good to wait till the microphone gets to you.
He was with his family, and he heard that there was a yatra. Is that what it was called?
It was a yatra. Where?
It was in Vrindavan.
It was in Vrindavan.
And
what year was it?
I don't know.
1929. Okay.
So he went to go see him. He was very excited. He wanted to go see Bhaktisiddhanta. And so he went, and there was, like, everyone got up to go on the yatra, to go walk. It was a procession. I don't know the exact name of it. But he was going to give a class, and he told everyone, and only a few people stayed behind, and he stayed there, and he listened.
Yeah, you got the idea. Yeah, there was a yatra, and they announced the buses are leaving to go see the Seshashai Vishnu deity. So everyone wants to go be there at 7 o'clock, but Guru Maharaj will also be giving a lecture at the same time in the tent. And Bhakti Prabhupada thought, what is this deity? I would rather hear. So him and a few people stayed. Most people went on the yatra to see the deity. And so he likes to hear. Bhaktisiddhanta noted that. So that's also a qualification for what we say a serious disciple. He likes to hear. We like to hear. Because hearing is where the message is transmitted. So this is from the Lilamrita. Okay. So we'll move on here. What's happening here? Okay, microphone. Jai Jagannath.
I don't remember exactly, Maharaj. I know this is at Radhakund.
This is at Radhakund in 1935.
Here, Bhaktisiddhanta is lamenting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is lamenting. Oh, should I read? Deeply concerned, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said to Abhay, "Agun Jwalbe, there will be fire. One day there will be fire in the Calcutta Gaudiya Math, and that fire of party interest will spread and destroy."
Yeah. So, what was Bhaktisiddhanta referring to?
That new temple opening?
Yeah, they had received a new building after many years of living wherever they could live. Now the whole Gaudiya Math, all the sannyasis, all the brahmacharis, there was an army, a big army of brahmacharis and sannyasis that was traveling everywhere and doing amazing preaching. There were 60 sannyasis going around all over India. And now they got a building. One very rich grihasta donated this palace for the devotees to live in. And then what happened?
Fighting.
This is my room. This is my room. No, this is my room. So there was a lot of infighting about, you know, who should be living where. And the preaching went down. Bhaktisiddhanta was concerned. So then what did he say? He said,
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta then said directly to Abhai, Amar Icha Chila Kichu Bhai Karana. I had a desire to print some books. If you ever get money, print books. Standing by Radha Kund and beholding his spiritual master, Abhai felt the words deeply enter his own life.
Yeah, this was
ever get money,
this is actually fundamental to the whole practice of Krishna consciousness. How much Prabhupada wanted his books distributed. Why? Because it was a direct order from his spiritual master. But he also gave reasons. And what were the reasons? Why book distribution is so important in this particular age we live in. Yes, Acharya Nishta.
Prabhupada said it was the best way to spread Krishna consciousness, and considered it the Brihad Murdanga, that the kirtan will go for the block, but his books might go all around the world.
Yeah, the sound of the transcendental message, just like the biggest yatra outside of India is Russia. There are tens and thousands of devotees, maybe even more, even hundreds, over 100,000 people practicing Krishna consciousness in Russia now. And what was it? A Bhagavad Gita started the whole thing. Prabhupada planted a seed in one Bhagavad Gita. So how important these books are. And then Prabhupada used the comparison. He said the communists were successful in spreading their propaganda because they were out on the streets just passing out books and leaflets to everybody. So this is a very good method. He liked that. So... okay, so let's see. Now, before we move on, there is a... who remembers that poem that Prabhupada wrote that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati likes so much? And because he liked it so much, he understood. He said, this person knows my mission. Who remembers that couplet? Yes. You remember the actual four lines? Yeah.
Absolute essential thou has proved, impersonal calamities thou has removed.
Yeah. Absolute ascension thou has proved, impersonal calamities thou has moved. And when that was a Vyasa Puja offering by Abhai, Prabhupada, to a spiritual master, what year was that? Does anyone remember? It was towards the end of Bhaktisiddhanta's stay. 1932? 33? It's right towards the end. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, he has understood my mind. I've come to destroy this impersonalism, voidism, which is so much prominent in spirituality, that God is formless, that the success of spiritual life is to become nothing. To merge into the absolute void and lose your identity. Without naming any particular groups that preach this type of philosophy, we can understand that it's not, what we say, in line with the principles of relationship, because relationship is based on personalities, and not by annihilating your personality, but by bringing your spiritual personality up. So Bhaktisiddhanta's mission, and Prabhupada also adopted that same thing, we'll get into that a little later, that the idea is to teach that God is a person. He has form, he has qualities, he has names, he has activities, he has relationships. He's a person. And we can have a relationship with that person. So that was a very big part of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to his spiritual master in 1935. And that letter was, actually it was 1936. It was just about a month before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati disappeared from the world. And what did he ask his letter? What was that? What was the gist of the letter? Does anyone know? Yes.
he was expressing, as I recall, that your sannyas and brahmacharya disciples can do so much direct service for you.
Right.
But what can I do?
But, he, in other words, he was asking the same question again. And Bhakti Siddhanta responded, I think. Here, yeah. You want to read that?
I'm a householder. Sometimes I give monetary help, while I cannot give you direct service. Is there any particular service I can do? Excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's last letter to his Guru Maharaj in December 1936.
This was Bhakti Siddhanta's response 2 weeks later.
I am fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people. This will do much good to yourself as well as your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teachings in the people. Srila Saraswati Thakura's reply 2 weeks later.
Yeah, Bhakti Siddhanta noted something special. Although he was a grihastha, and he wasn't even coming regularly to the meetings, he was living outside with his family, still, he was given the highest mission. So here's another, what we say, important principle, is that it doesn't matter what ashram you're in. If you're Krishna conscious, you can do wonderful service. Ashram is no limitation. So he received confirmation again, the same thing. And here, okay.
Abhay had once recognized this to be the same instruction he had received at their first meeting in 1922. He took it as a confirmation. There was now no doubt as to the purpose of his life.
Yeah, he had to hear it again. So he heard it again just before his spiritual master left. Then Prabhupada decided, okay, let me see if I can preach in India. He didn't go to the West. He stayed in India. And here was his first, what we say, attempt to do something. And where is this? Jhansi. And Prabhupada created what?
Spiritual science has put forward the following aims and objectives in view for the society.
He really tried to develop Krishna consciousness in India. And what did he do? He got this building that was given to him by one organization, the Bharati Vidya Bhavan. We know in Mumbai there is a place near our temple, the Bharati Vidya Bhavan. And it's a more or less a philanthropic, humanitarian type of institution that does various works for humanitarian ways. And Prabhupada secured the building from them. And then he began. And he met his first, he got his first disciple too, Acharya Bhavakar. He was the first one to follow Prabhupada in India. So, and then Prabhupada decides to start a whole movement in India. Now his spiritual master told him to go to the West. He's starting it in India. Okay, so. And this was some of the things he put down on paper.
To propagate spiritual knowledge systematically for checking the imbalance of life to the whole race of India and the world over, with the view to educate the people in general in the techniques of spiritual life as the basis for balanced physic and biological developments of the human race.
Education, right? To educate people. We don't want people just to come and look at the deity and go away and nothing changes. Prabhupada made his mission a mission of education. What is that education? Learning about our relationship with God and how to access that relationship and how to serve God in the best possible way. So it's really about spiritual education. So that's the first principle. The second one was?
To prove it practically by active work and preaching that Sri Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the outcome of everyone's sacrifice, penance, meditation, arts, culture, science, because he is the supreme proprietor of the whole universe and eternal friend of everybody.
To teach us about Krishna, who he is, the supreme enjoyer, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, he's the purpose of all sacrifices, penances. He is the source of all arts, culture, science. He is the foundation of all the universe. He's a supreme proprietor and an eternal friend. He's based that statement is based on that verse from the Bhagavad Gita. And what did Prabhupada say about that verse from the Bhagavad Gita? What did he say? Yeah. It's the peace formula. Some people say peace. If you want peace, just read Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, verse number 29, the last verse in the chapter. That's the peace formula. What is the three principles for peace formula? Three principles is mentioned here. God is three things. Who knows? Acharya Nishtha.
Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything.
He's the proprietor.
The enjoyer.
He's the enjoyer.
And the best friend.
And best friend. He owns everything. It's all meant for his enjoyment, including us. And he is everyone's friend. So another name for a friend is Surit. Surit means friend, right? Now what does Surit mean? What is the two words, two terms? Friend is described as three ways that you can be a friend. But the best friend is a surit. What does surit mean? S-U-R-S-U-H-R-T. Surit. Surit. Huh? Huh? You get it? I think you got it. I think you got it.
Who is very close to the heart?
Who's close to the heart? Surit means heart and su. One who's very dear to one's heart. So the word friend can be described in different ways, but the best friend is one who is dear to one's heart. That's Krishna. So he's the best friend. That means, what does it mean he's the best friend? That means he does everything for your benefit, even though you don't like it. But it's true. Okay. So, next one. This is Prabhupada talking to Prime Minister. Yeah, Lal Shastri. Badu Shastri. He was the Prime Minister of India. Prabhupada is trying to convince him about his what? Srimad Bhagavatam. What inspired Prabhupada to write his Bhagavatam? Who knows that one? Yeah, that plus the statement by Bhakti Siddhanta said, you're a very educated person. You should, you know, you should take this knowledge to the West, and you should should also write books. So actually, he started to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam. What was also fundamental in Srila Prabhupada's writings at that time. Which particular book came out in a revolutionary way at that time? It was the first book that we ever had. Easy Journey to Other Planets. Wow. Sounds far out. Not only journey, but it's an easy one. Okay, so tell us about how that came about. Who knows the story of Easy Journey? Yes, Prabhu.
There was a news that two scientists...
Jai Sisi Kishore Kishore Kijai.
Like some scientists who got Nobel Prize, they were discussing about matter and antimatter, antimaterial particle. And on that, so Prabhupada took it as a starting point and then he went on explaining about spirit and matter.
Yeah, Prabhupada wrote an article about describing that the difference between matter and spirit, and he used very scientific language. And that article was published in one journal, and some scientists, physicists, actually picked up and liked this very much, and it inspired him to speak more about this point. But it was actually it was an article that later turned into a whole book called Easy Journey to Other Planets, where Prabhupada described that spirit is antimatter, where matter is matter, or what we say, you know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, like that. But spirit is opposite of matter. So it was very appealing to the scientific community. So there's an example of how to preach to different types of people. So using scientific language, he presented spiritual ideas. And later, that was so inspiring by the scientific community, they complimented on him. And then he published it as a book called Easy Journey to Other Planets. Okay, so Prabhupada, his Bhagavatam blossoms. What's that? What's that little thing up in the corner here on the left-hand side on the top? It's a printing press. That's how Prabhupada was printing his... What else happened during that time? Another particular periodical that came out for the first time. It's still out, yes. Back to Godhead. What year was that? Who knows? 1944 was the first Back to Godhead. It was, what was it? Two or three pieces of paper with an article on it written by Prabhupada. That was Back to Godhead. Now it's a magazine, right? So Prabhupada started that in 1944, and he was just writing little articles on social, political, or spiritual topics, sometimes challenging the politicians about the way they were organizing society and using spiritual terminology. So Prabhupada was really, he was like just putting out so much. He also wrote this thing called Gita Nagari. That also happened at that time. There was an article that Prabhupada wrote was called Gita Nagari. And later he named one of our communities in Pennsylvania named Gita Nagari. Well, what was Gita Nagari? Gita Nagari was the ideal living society. How to live ideally based on the teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So taking Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita, he wrote this whole description of the ideal community. It was called Gita Nagari. And he based a lot of his, what we say, preaching based on this idea of creating the ideal society. And of course, we haven't done that yet. We're still working on it. But that was Prabhupada's vision, to have the ideal community where everyone is living according to the principles in Bhagavad Gita spoken by Krishna himself. Okay, so here, this is an interesting statement. Who would like to read? Any of the ladies?
Language, especially a foreign language.
No, start from the beginning again.
Our capacity of presenting the matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there may be so many literary discrepancies in spite of our honest attempt to present it in a proper way. But we are sure that with our all faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of the society will still accept this on account of its being an honest attempt for glorifying the Almighty Great, so much now badly needed.
Mm-hmm. So, where have you heard that before? Where is that mentioned again earlier? Bhagavatam. Prabhupada writes one purport in the second canto, I believe it is, where he describes, you know, even though the language is not adequate, if the message is an emergency, people will understand. Yes. You want to say something? Yeah, go ahead. Give him the microphone. No, next door. Yeah.
I think in this regard, Prabhupada quotes that shloka, tadvag visargo jantaga viplo. I think after this, Prabhupada quotes that shloka, and in that purport also he mentioned that tadvag visargo jantaga viplo.
Yeah.
Yes, mean.
Yeah, that's the verse from the second canto, I believe it is, first chapter. First canto, first chapter? Fifth chapter, 11th verse, right. Okay. And well, the analogy was, if your house is on fire and people are living next to you, don't speak your language. Still, you can convey the idea you're in trouble. Even if they don't understand, it's obvious that they'll know what you're talking about. So the message is so important and so urgent that even though it's presented in a language that is very, what we say, full of grammatical defects, and if you read Prabhupada's Bhagavatams, there's a lot of grammatical mistakes in there. I mean, some of the sentences are like one paragraph for one sentence. Just like run-on sentences, so many mistakes. But he said this is secondary. Of course, later he wanted his books corrected so it would be presented in the circles of scholars where they would appreciate not only the works itself but the presentation. But initially he was making the point that this message can't wait for literary expertise. It has to be expressed as in the most timely way. So this was that statement based on that. And that's why Prabhupada's Bhagavatams were so popular, although they were full of mistakes. Any of you have the old Bhagavatams, the first ones? They're actually, the devotees in ISKCON have reprinted the old ones with all the mistakes. And you can get copies of that. I have one of the original, and it's completely falling apart. There's no cover on the front and back. It's the one of the ones Prabhupada brought over from India. And it's just like, it's like a piece of treasure. Because that Bhagavatam, these Bhagavatams were the first to hit America and gradually go to different places and then open up the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay. So, okay, this is his dream now. What's happening? We're moving into nothing. Another one. So Prabhupada had this vision. Why? Why was he thinking in that way? I mean, there's many answers to that question, or there's a few answers anyway. Yes, Asraya.
New York was the kind of the capital of the world in terms of leading.
It's capital of Kali Yuga.
Yeah. Kali's capital. Everybody was following America, and Srila Prabhupada wanted to use New York as a starting point.
Yeah, the most important country was America, and the most important city was New York. So that's Prabhupada's dream. He also said, my God brothers, they failed in so many places, so if I have to fail, let me fail in a new place. It's also Prabhupada's transcendental wit. So he came to New York, and he came to what place in New York when he first came into New York? Where did he begin? Huh? The first place in New York. No, I'm not how he arrived. But he came to the Upper West Side, where there were, the more or less the upper class. And he tried to somehow or other do something there, but it didn't work. We can get that into the next lesson. I'm jumping ahead now, but go ahead.
Spend in Butler, Pennsylvania. Was that before
this? One month.
Okay.
Bumpa Prabhupada was there for a month. And then he moved on and he went to New York. But that was where he first, he landed in Boston, and then 2 days later he arrived in New York, and then he was put on a bus by an official person and driven to Butler, Pennsylvania, and he stayed there, Sally Agarwal's house, for a couple of weeks, and then they moved him to the YMCA. Prabhupada was in the YMCA. And then after a month there, he decided to go back to New York and start doing his work. Yeah. Okay. I forgot one part. Prabhupada was a householder, but when he came over, he was a what? Sannyasi. How did that happen? Wow. Anybody want to tell that story? That's an interesting one. Yes, Mataji. Good to hear about Matajis and Sannyasis. They go together. Okay.
Prabhupada was trying hard to maintain his family, but then at one point he noticed that his wife was not cooperating.
How was she not cooperating?
She was drinking tea and having biscuits.
Yeah, she didn't want to give up tea. Oh, you know the story? Can you tell that story?
So one day she traded Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita first manuscript for biscuits and tea.
Yeah, she traded his bag of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam manuscript? Bhagavatam manuscript, I think. Manuscript for some tea. Later Prabhupada confronted her and he said, either
tea or me.
And
then
she
said, okay, I'll take tea.
She said, I'll take tea. And then he left. Tea was very popular in those days in India. The British had imported many wonderful cultural activities, and tea drinking was, even today in India now, right? 4 o'clock, everything stops, you take out the tea and the biscuits. Right? It's at 4 o'clock, right? I even know the time, yeah. Huh? Or is it 3:45? I forgot. I think it's 4 o'clock tea time. So yeah, Prabhupada said tea or me. But then what happened? How did he eventually accept the sannyas order? What was the events that led up to that? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhupada was trying to preach. So that time one of his godbrothers said, if you really want to preach, if I'm not wrong, it's Kesho Maharaj, then you please take sannyas. And that led him to take sannyas.
Also Srila Bhaktivedanta
Prabhupada had a dream. He woke up in the middle of the night and he ran to Sridhar Maharaj and said, Guru Maharaj is appearing to me and he wants me to take sannyas. He banged on Sridhar Swami's door in the middle of the night. At 1 o'clock he was all out of breath practically. And he was thinking, this is horrible. I have to give up my family? And then it happened again, the second time. He had another dream not long after that. And the same thing happened. Bhaktisiddhanta appeared to him in a dream and said, if you want to preach, you have to go to the West. And then, but in order to preach, you need to take sannyas. So it was very difficult for Prabhupada to do that, but he did it, because it was instructions for the spirits. And that was it wasn't very few people were taking sannyas in those days. Still, even today. But people understood what it meant, because sannyas means socially dead. There's no connection with the material activities anymore. So one is socially dead, that's what it's called. So Prabhupada was thinking, I can preach as a householder, but Bhaktisiddhanta had another idea. So what year was that he took sannyas?
55?
I believe it was 59, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
Or 55.
I can't remember.
You know, I think it might have. Yeah, it was 55. He was 59 years old. That's right, yeah. In 1955, he was 59 years old. He took sannyas, and then he went to Vrindavan. And he lived at that room, the Radha Dharmadhar room, which we saw at the beginning. And what inspired him? What was one of the incidents that happened during that time when Prabhupada was there? He was writing his Bhagavatams in Sri Vrindavan Dham. He lived there for 3-4 years, was it? Or 5 years? Just living as a simple mendicant, getting water from the local Jamuna. Somebody was cooking some little khichdi for him every day, and that's all he was eating practically. And then what happened? One of our God sisters, Mula Prakriti, she writes in her book, Our Prabhupada, she talks about this one incident where she went and she interviewed all the people that knew Prabhupada during that time. You know the story?
I don't know if I'm... I don't know the story that you are telling about, but I think in Leelamrita it is mentioned that Rupa Goswami appeared to him one day and he said, you should go to the West, I will help you.
Yeah. One morning, Prabhupada was chanting japa, and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan, or was it Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, both appeared to Srila Prabhupada in person, and they told him, yeah, go to the West, and we are with you. We will help you. So, if that's not a confirmation, when Srila Rupa Goswami appears to you in person, tells you, go ahead. So that's what happened. The Mula Prakriti, she actually documents that by mentioning the person who told, well, Prabhupada told that story to that to one person. That person told it to Mula Prakriti. So that's pretty amazing. And he had that vision of Rupa Goswami. Okay. Here we go.
Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta today. He's heading to the West without delay. His books are in their trunks just like gold. He carries a message true and bold. His teacher wanted Prabhupada to go to the places where people did not know that the God we all pray to is the same, and Krishna is his original name. Bring him here so his message of service can spring anew, pleasing as the morning dew. The absolute is sentient, as proven long ago. Life comes from life, it has always been so. Impersonal deception is the only veil, puts a soul on calamity's trail. Blow winds on the water, oh Atlantic, please bring him here. Then the clouds that carry illusion's blight will scatter from his words of light. Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta today. His heart attack will come along the way. But Krishna will know just what to do, becoming a special rowing crew. Row, row, all the incarnations bestow your mercy. Please be kind, let him land here safely. Let freedom ring, let my heart have a song to sing. Prabhupada can see Boston Harbor now. Oh, Atlantic, I see him on the bow.
Well, Jamini sings this song, this glorifying Prabhupada's coming to America, and how he had, this picture was drawn by one god sister, I forget, she's the wife of Gorhari, I forgot her name. Anyway, she drew these two pictures of Prabhupada. You see Prabhupada with Krishna? And there's the scripture and the Lord Chaitanya and the different incarnations. When Prabhupada had to cross the Atlantic, it took him 39 days, almost 40 days on the sea. And he had two heart attacks. And the second heart attack was quite severe. And he was all alone. The only person he knew on the whole ship was the captain, Captain Pandai, and his wife. And he was practically all alone, just reading his Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had a Chaitanya Charitamrita with him. And he spent 40 days. And he describes being on the ocean. He said, when there is no sea, when the waves are calm, it's foggy. And when it's not foggy, it's always rough. Have you ever been seasick? Oh, I just went on a boat trip in London. It was from August 19th to August 27th. We were on the sea for about 8 days. We stopped in a few ports, but many devotees got seasick. I also got to the verge of almost getting to that point of being seasick. But just being, when you're on the ocean, you're just thinking, I can't wait to get on land because we're just land animals. It might be nice out there for a little while, but after a while you think, I just want to get on, I want to walk on the land. I want to be normal again. So imagine 40 days, 39 days on the, and Prabhupada spent Janmashtami. There was one Janmashtami. He actually writes how he was feeling separation from all his god brothers, being alone on the Janmashtami day, and how he took shelter only in Chaitanya Charitamrita and chanting his rounds, and chanting as much as he could. He had the second heart attack, and it was at night, and he practically lost his life. But what happened was Krishna appeared in his dream, and Krishna appeared in the most amazing way. He appeared in different incarnations of himself. You can see there, there's the tortoise, the fish, Hamsa, you know. There's Nrisingadev and Varahadev like that, Lord Chaitanya, and Krishna himself. Just to give assurance, what was the assurance that he was given? He said, I'm borrowing this boat, you'll make it. Krishna appeared to him and said, don't worry, I'm with you. And so Prabhupada took strength from that, and then somehow or other was able to, you know, endure all the hardships. And finally, after 39 days, he landed in Boston Harbor, 5:30 in the morning on September 17th, 1965. And he got off the boat, he looked around, he said, what am I doing here? It was a lonely place. It was a very dark and, what we say, industrial area of the city. It was just docks and mills. And he just looked around. He said, what am I going to do here? They'll never understand the message. But let me try anyway. Let me try. We'll talk about that when Prabhupada comes to America and how his mission actually developed. But when he did, when he got there, he wrote that famous poem, Markine Bhagavad Dharma, where he's saying, my dear Lord, you brought me to this place. It's a horrible place. People are so steeped in the modes of passion and ignorance. How will they ever understand this message? But you are the, he glorified Krishna saying, by you, you can make them understand the words that I'm going to speak. Only by your arrangement. Although he was a great proponent of religion and was deep in, he understood that success simply means to depend on the Lord in all situations. We learned that in our Krishna consciousness, how much Prabhupada depended on Krishna for everything and how Krishna came through. And how that is the actual success in the execution of one's devotional service. How much we have to depend on the mercy of the Lord, how much we have to depend on the mercy of the spiritual master. And not so much on our own efforts. Our efforts simply are opportunities to bring about the mercy. We make the effort and then the mercy comes. But also the prayer for the mercy is the complete mercy. So when things become overwhelming, Prabhupada was all alone. He knew it, and nobody. All he had was a letter in his pocket from somebody he didn't know who was living in one city in America that he never met before. And that was his only contact. 70 years old, 2 heart attacks, 40 days on the ocean, seasickness. It's not like, you know, Krishna could have sent him a TWA airplane ticket and said, all right, just jump on that and you can go and come to America. Krishna could have did that, but he didn't. Why? Why did Krishna make it difficult for Prabhupada? Yes. Yeah, to show the glory of such a personality that this person is willing to do anything or whatever is required to carry out the instructions of his spiritual master. And that's Krishna's way of showing the world the quality of a great soul, is that they don't see any impediments. Prabhupada talks about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, famous commentator on Shastra. He commentates on the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 41st chapter, in which he says, Krishna says, Vyasa maya budhir ekeha kunanandana buhu sakya yanatas cha budhiyo vyavasahinam. That those who are resolute in purpose and their aim is one, they're fixed. They can actually understand how to achieve the goal. Resolute means keeping your mind on the goal. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse. Resolute in purpose means whether it's easy or whether it's difficult, it's not a consideration. That's what resolute in purpose means. Easy or difficult is not the consideration. It's the instructions that they're consideration. And Prabhupada had that. And he said, based on this principle, I executed my instructions to my spiritual master, and I was successful. But he also writes, I had to walk through fire to spread this movement. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. There were times where Prabhupada was in America. This was in the first few months. And nothing happened. Nothing happened for about a year. He met a few people, but things came and gone. And he used to go down to the docks where the boats would come in and check the schedule of the boats going back to India. And then he would just check it and then he would leave. And he was doing this every day for a while. And one man, ticket seller, said to him, "You're coming every day, you're checking the schedules, but you never buy a ticket." And Prabhupada, they said Prabhupada never really responded to him, he just smiled. But in his heart, he was thinking, "I came, I tried, I failed, let me go back." But then he said, "No, let me stay." So somehow or other, he stayed, and after about a year, practically a year, it wasn't until the beginning of, the middle of 1966, that things started to develop. So what hardships did Prabhupada have to go? And he had a third heart attack in 1967. And when the doctor examined him, he said that you were supposed to leave at the world at this time. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, Krishna, I was praying to Krishna, I need some more time. My mission is not even begun, what to speak about completed." So this is a beautiful illustration of how Krishna took care of his pure devotee and just appeared to him in a dream and gave him assurance. Just continue on, I'm with you. So I think this is the last slide in this. This begins lesson number 5, which starts at
4:30. We still have a half hour for this one.
Should we go into this lesson, or do we want to ask some more questions on to this one about Prabhupada and his pre-days of coming to America? Any questions, comments? Anyone? Richard?
You know, Krishna came to him and said, I'm taking care. So that year that he was contemplating going back.
That's what's meant. That was, the history was like that. He got no support from anyone, nor did he have any money, nor did he have any real place to go. He had nothing.
So the question is, during that time, you know, what's the relationship like with Krishna? You know, it's not that I'm going to be able to understand, but there's a question there.
He had faith. Obviously, he had faith in his spiritual master's instruction. And he had faith in Krishna also. But his god brothers also tried, and they also failed. And they were sannyasis. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't have any success to look towards. It was just faith. That's all. What Krishna was telling him, we'll never know. But we can understand it was, he had some faith, though, a lot of faith. Yes, Himanshu.
Maharaj, in my own personal experience, I feel that sometimes I'm like waiting for that big test, you know, like when you get that big instruction, like, okay, now go and write a book or something. But frankly, like even the small instructions that I've already been given, I don't follow them so well. So,
yeah. You want some help?
Yes, Maharaj. How do we get, like, realize that we're actually being tested every single day on the instructions that we've been given? We're always waiting for the big one.
Yeah, at every moment you can choose whether you want Maya or Krishna. That you can do, but when you talk about tests, sometimes you get faced with a real test and you have to decide. Am I going to take shelter of Krishna with faith, or am I going to just take shelter of what I know and what I usually do, because it's easier that way? Many times it's just like, it's faith, you have nothing to go on. But what do the Christians say? The Christians have a very nice definition of faith. It's really nice. Faith is the proof of things yet to happen and of things yet unseen. So something has yet to happen or something that's yet unseen, what is that proof, faith? Faith proves the future. So faith is powerful. Faith can move mountains. Faith can change the world. One person's faith has developed a society of thousands and thousands of devotees who are ready to give their lives to serve the Lord. One person's faith. I mean, Prabhupada was writing to his godbrothers, please send mridangas, please send some money. I want to open a Radha Krishna temple here in New York. He also got promises from one brahmachari that he would come and join him, but then the brahmachari was told by his spiritual master, don't go. And nobody thought he was going to do anything. They just thought, all right, he's going there. He's going to come back like all of us. He's not going to do anything. When he was trying to get a passage on the steamship, Sumati Murariji, she tried to discourage him. Prabhupada would meet her and talk to her about Bhagavad Gita every night, and he asked her, can you sponsor me? And she said, it's cold there. What will you eat there? You'll simply die. I can't do this, not because I don't want to, but because I love you and I don't want to see you suffer. I'm not going to give you the ticket. Not because I don't want to, but because I care for you. America's cold. It's so cold there. What will you eat? There's only potatoes. That's all. There's no chapatis, you know. Everything else is, you know, non-veg. You can't eat anything, right? Everything is contaminated food. She was talking, and Prabhupada, what did he do? He sat on her doorstep for 3 days until she finally said, all right, I'll give you a ticket. He wouldn't move day and night. He sat on her doorstep right outside her office for 3 days. He said, I'm not moving till you give me that ticket. He did. And then, when he finally got permission, he had to get his P form. And then he had to get reviewed by the personnel. And the person said, we can't really give you passage because you're not sponsored by an organization. You're sponsored by a person. And therefore, we can't really authorize this P form. So he was rejected from getting permission to leave India to go. So what did Prabhupada do? He said, let me see your superior. I want to talk to the top man. And so he met the man who was in charge of the whole office, and he talked to him, he preached to him, and the man said, all right, you can go. Signed it, yeah. So that means Prabhupada had obstacles. What happened when he was trying to print his Back to Godhead magazine? In the middle of the summertime, he was walking along the street, and it was so hot that he fainted. He lost consciousness because of the heat as he was walking. And then another time he was walking, he got gored by a bull, and he was knocked down. And he would take his one or two pieces of paper that he had printed for the Back to Godhead. He would go to the tea stalls in Delhi and say, please buy this little newspaper. And they would say, oh, Swamiji, what you're doing is very nice, but we have no time. We have no time. And Prabhupada kept hearing that, no time. And then finally he wrote an article, no time. People have time for everything, but what's important? Therefore, so it was one obstacle after another. It was 1922 that he received the instructions to go to America. It was 1965 that he finally left. That's 35 years later. So during those 35 years, he was pretty much preparing himself for his mission in life. But it wasn't until the age of 70 that he actually started to do it. Yes. How many obstacles did he confront? Yeah.
My question also relates to obstacles. How to understand when we receive an instruction and we're confronted with obstacles, how do we understand that that's just, let's say, Krishna testing or other factors versus Krishna has something else in mind, so maybe it's best to revisit
that's
the
easy.
Instruction.
Ask a question. Just ask, all right, you've given me this service. How do I do it? Should I do it? Yes. How do I do it? Here. So you can question. Prabhupada also questioned when Bhaktisiddhanta appeared to him in a dream about taking sannyas. He had to run to his spirit, to his godbrother, Srihar Swami, and say, Guru Maharaj wants me to take sannyas. What do you think? And of course, so even then, you know, Prabhupada got confirmation from one of his senior godbrothers, who was very close to him, Srihar Maharaj. So get confirmation. Question. If we don't question, we may not do it, or we may do it in the wrong way. Okay, how much? You got that one? Question. Well, if we want to do something on our own, we should also question. We may not have to question our spiritual master, but we may question from the other senior devotees. I got this idea for preaching. What do you think? And they say, well, yeah, that's nice. Or they might say, sounds good, try it. So I think everything that we've done in our Krishna consciousness movement is a way of seeing how we can do things in the future. We can learn by our mistakes, and we can learn by our successes also. That's one of the problems that Western society has. It tends to be very impersonal. Impersonal means that I can figure it out without the help of anybody else. Because getting the help of anybody else means I have to be a little bit humble, and I have to be a little bit open for suggestions that may be different than what I think, like that. You know, we're dealing with the Western society. What is the Western society? It's basically the rugged individual. I can make it on my own. But Vedic culture, Vedic society, and spiritual life means that we make it together, not by ourselves. We need each other. We need each other more, just as much as we need Krishna. In fact, we need each other even more than we need Krishna, because we can't get Krishna unless we have relationships with each other. Each and every devotee. So that we can confirm by the association of devotees. Yes. You have the mic.
Hare Krishna. One thing I had heard is that one person was asking Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, why did you wait so long to come? You got the instruction when you were, you know, in your 20s, and now you're 70 and you're finally
Prabhupada
coming.
Said, I was in Maya. That's one of the answers he had.
I had heard the
that's what
response.
He said, but of course that's not true.
The response I was thinking is that he said, I wanted to prepare, I didn't want to present myself as a fool. Have you heard like this also?
He didn't want to present himself as a...
as a fool, that he was preparing. It was a...
Yeah, he wanted to prepare himself for going. But at one point he realized there was no need to prepare anymore, just go. He was over-preparing. But you look at it from that point of view, it looks like... But you look at it for another time... He came just at the right time in America when people were questioning values and authority, and they were looking towards the East for some kind of spirituality, some kind of new lifestyle. And Prabhupada was really there to kind of like, he was mystical. Some people say when we first met Prabhupada, I don't know what he was saying, but I really liked him. Because Prabhupada had that strong Bengali accent along with the British brogue, you know, so he mixed it. I remember when I first came in contact with the Hare Krishnas in New York, the devotees would be playing Prabhupada's tapes and I would be listening and I couldn't understand what he was saying. You, any of you have that similar experience? You really have to tune yourself in. After a while you can start to hear. But a lot of devotees, at least in the West, maybe not in India, but had that problem with listening and hearing Prabhupada. Couldn't really, but, you know, it was, you could feel his personality, his presence, his purity, but his words really didn't make sense until much later. Maybe even now it doesn't make sense yet. We're still trying to catch up. So, yeah. Okay, burning question.
Well, thank you, Maharaj Krishna. It seems that faith can be shaken. I was wondering if you could comment about how, like, Prabhupada, he was able to go to his god brother. In ISKCON, we have so many different gurus. So if I look at a Prabhu, He may not have the same guru as me, but we're all God brothers. So, you know, if you say, well, my guru says this, and your guru says that, then as a family, ISKCON, sometimes that can be a thing that might shake the faith.
So, it's a philosophical question. In taking instructions from others, they shouldn't be contrary to the instructions that are given by your spiritual master. Philosophically speaking, diksha and shiksha are equal, but when it comes to instructions, they have to be aligned themselves. If they're not, then instructions from diksha is the one that is accepted. So if you get instructions from others, you have to either one or two things. You have to be intelligent to understand that this is not different than what I'm getting from my spiritual master, or you have to run it by your spiritual master and find out if it's okay. Usually you accept a shiksha guru or someone who is also you can get instruction from that's very much in line of with the mood and the teachings of your spiritual master. So you don't, you know, get confused sometimes. This is on a practical level. Yes, Jai Jagannath.
Relationships, the point you were just discussing, we hear that in our sampradaya, it's a shiksha sampradaya, which makes it seems like precedence is given to shiksha over diksha in terms of the consideration of understanding of what we should be doing with our life. So I was wondering if you can just explain this.
Well, the prominence in our sampradaya is the shiksha sampradaya, but philosophically, if your diksha guru is there, in terms of your own, what we say, direction, your diksha guru remains the main person in your own life. The diksha guru may sanction you to go to another person and say, well, whatever he says, then you can follow, that's fine. Usually sometimes we should run it by our spiritual master that I want to take this person as my shiksha or get regular instructions from this person. I mean, if one of my disciples came up to me and said to me, I want to take instructions from this particular God brother, some God brothers I would say no, because I know it just wouldn't work because our moods are different. But if they said it from other ones, I would say yes. Although everyone is following Prabhupada. So our line is shiksha, but diksha still is the foundation where we get our directions. Even now, for those of us who are Prabhupada disciples, if we're getting instructions, we have to run it by and we'll see if they're in line with what Prabhupada would like us to do or his teachings. They shouldn't be contrary, or shouldn't be... Yeah, contrary. Yeah.
I'm in an ISKCON situation where many disciples actually don't have either, like say, a personal connection with their diksha gurus, which is the case for many in ISKCON.
Yeah.
Then how are they supposed to give precedence to what the diksha guru is saying if they don't have much of a, you know, relationship on a practical level?
Well, if the diksha guru is still on the planet, they should do something. It's like write him a letter. Say, Hari Bol Maharaj, you know, I got a question. It's like I asked my disciples to write me once a month as a feature. And just check in. Got some questions? Tell me about what you're doing once a month. And so there should be some contact with this, with your diksha guru if he's still physically present, yeah. But the diksha guru might say, all right, you're working in this area. I don't go to that area so much. You work under the guidance of that person and take instructions from them, yeah. And that happens a lot also. Obviously, in all cases, we need shelter. Even if we're initiated, we still need shelter on a day-to-day level for guidance. At least someone we can bounce things off. Like, one of the problems in our movement is that sometimes we just don't do that. And then we get confused or we get problems and we can't solve it. And the problems are really so simple. The problem is we don't talk about it to anybody. That's what Prabhupada set up Istagosti. He set up, you know, darshan, so devotees could talk, ask questions, get clarifications like that. A devotee should be thinking, what's my obstacle in Krishna consciousness? How to remove it? We should think, what is blocking me in my spiritual life now? What do I have to work on? What are my attachments? And then try to, you know, remove that. And that can be done either through the siksha or the diksha guru. If it's done through the siksha, the diksha guru is going to be happy. He's going to be happy. Someone is helping my disciple. That's fine. He's going to be very happy. So, get a buddy. Everyone should have a buddy. They call it the buddy system. Where did that come from? Is that the Boy Scouts or no? A buddy. Someone you can talk to and open up your heart. That's Krishna consciousness. Material energy is too powerful. We can't make it. It's too difficult. Yes.
Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Diksha Guru or Spiritual Masters Nityananda Prabhu, he's specifically remembering Rupa and Raghunath at the end of every chapter.
Mm, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. Not that he's giving like precedence over them, over Nityananda Prabhu, the Adi Guru. But,
yeah.
But still, he's pointing out some type of special significance of the shiksha that he's received from them.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to understand, because in ISKCON, although we hear from Srila Prabhupada's literatures of the equality of the Diksha and Shiksha Gurus, Shiksha Guru is not really an entity of discussion that much in ISKCON on a practical level.
It's not.
And it creates confusion, especially when many of us don't really have that personal connection with our Diksha Gurus.
Yeah. Actually, Shiva Ram Maharaj wanted to formalize Shiksha. He wanted to make it formal like Diksha. It never went through, but that's one idea where you actually take a Shiksha Guru and get guidance from that person in a formal way. That way that person becomes accountable and you also become accountable. That person becomes responsible and you become accountable. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's just something we need to work on. You think, all right, I got this struggle. I can't reach my spiritual master. He's across the ocean. Maybe he doesn't answer emails so easily. So what should I do? And you think, oh, I have to find someone who I know he would be pleased that I go to and get instructions from. Someone generally in the local area. That's the easiest, because the person in the local area usually knows you better than person who's not working with you or working in that area. Yeah, we need that. Okay. So, Prabhupada's, this one was called, the next lesson is the ISKCON branch. And that's coming up in an hour and a half. So, break, but come back. You promise? Okay. Come back, because I really need your association. It's all right. So come back, and then we'll talk about how it all developed in America. And this is also quite interesting. And then tomorrow, there's three lessons also. We added an afternoon lesson. It's not on the schedule. It's from 2 to 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. First one's 10:30 to 12, 2 to 3:30, and then the Sunday Feast class will be the final one. And for the middle one, I'm going to put in another lesson called fictional Prabhupada. What people think Prabhupada is, but he's not. So this is an interesting one. And then we'll get to the last one, your Prabhupada, the real Prabhupada. Okay, thank you. See you in an hour and a half. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.